Welcome to All Things Business for Physicians, where I chat with marketers, accountants, physicians, and consultants to talk about everything like social media, office culture, running your medical practice, and how to align marketing and operations. If you're looking to grow your practice, get access to our patient acquisition and retention framework at hip.agency. Now, shout out to today's featured guest, Dr. Mike Harris. Dr. Harris is a pain management specialist, and we actually helped him launch his practice over in Destin, Florida recently. So, Dr. Harris, are you ready to share your story and talk about starting a medical practice from the ground up today?
Absolutely.
All right. So, take a moment to introduce yourself and give us a glimpse into your personal life.
So, I was born in 1974 in a small farm town, Adrian, Michigan. I would say that it's probably about the size of Milton or smaller.
Okay.
So football's big, you know, sports are big. Nobody's ever heard of lacrosse. We didn't really play soccer. So it was like baseball, basketball, football. So I was a two-sport athlete in high school. And then in college, I got what you call a quote-unquote scholarship to go to Cornell, you know, to play football. But it's, you know, Ivy League, they don't really give any scholarships, just sort of grants. So
yeah.
They find money for you. So I played there, didn't end up going any farther. Ended up 2 years serving a mission for my church in Haiti in the Bahamas. And then came back, got married almost like within 4 months of that. And then started medical school a year later at Tulane. Tulane, the reason I picked that is my wife is a Tulane graduate. She's an internist. So it seemed like a good fit. And when I finished that, we had already had two kids by the time I was done, our first two in New Orleans. Did my residency at the University of Michigan in primary care sports fellowship and then an anesthesia fellowship at the University of Michigan. And by that time, I think we had five kids at the end. We ended up having triplets. So
awesome. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So now we have six total. We ended up having our last one here, and I think that's totally it. But yeah, big family. My wife's a physician. She's Cuban, comes from a huge 11-kid family. I think eight of them are alive now, and they're all over Miami. So, yeah.
Awesome. Cool. So let's talk about the area of your expertise. And I don't really mean, you know, pain management, but sure. What do you think is an area of expertise that you bring to your business and your staff?
Okay. So I think the things that, you know, are difficult and I can't describe, you know, what I bring other than mentioning pain management and sports medicine. I think what really separates good physicians from okay physicians from bad physicians is your ability to find out the diagnosis and accurately diagnose somebody, because there's not many new tools in the toolbox. They come out every once in a while, but a shot in the back's a shot in the back. You know, you put it in one spot, if it's not where the pain generator is, it's not going to work. So I think what I bring to the table is something that I think I'm good at is finding what's wrong with people quickly, diagnosing it. I think that's like 95% of the battle in medicine. And then using the available tools we have to get them better. Try to be minimally invasive as possible, but personable. I think keeping a practice small, being able to spend time with your patients, being able to, you know, get a lot of face-to-face time while you're not staring at a computer and doing a note or running, you know, dozens of people through a day. I think that's the personal touch. And I think, you know, we do a good job of doing that.
Good. Awesome. So let's talk about your journey. You've recently started performance and regenerative medicine. And take us to your worst moment as a business owner.
Which one? Count the many. I think the biggest thing was trying to figure out, you know, how I was going to start over from working for a big hospital and having, you know, close to like 2,500 or 3,000 patients, and being able to start knowing that you can't take any of the patient information with you. You can't, you know, reach out to these people and sort of steal them away as a competitor when you're in a non-compete. So it's a big transition trying to figure out how I'm going to reach my former patients and gather new patients. The lowest of the low, I think, is, you know, you think things are going to start off really fast. And you think, oh, at the 6-month period, I'm going to be right where I was when I was working for the big hospital, but it just doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the lowest point or the worst point about it is realizing, boy, this is going to take more time than what I thought. It's not growing as fast. Had a huge practice, and now I feel like I'm starting over. I might as well be in Hawaii, you know, or Alaska mm-hmm. or somewhere, somewhere totally different, even though I'm only like 45 miles away. So that is the toughest part. That's the lowest part is trying to come to grips with your expectations and knowing it's going to take a lot longer and just being patient and believing in yourself. You know, I think doctors are pretty confident folks generally.
Mm-hmm.
And we always think we have a good product. You know, we have a way to make a good business. But yeah, when the rubber meets the road, it's really hard to realize that things just aren't going as fast as you want.
Yeah. If only they did.
If only they did. And then when they are fast, then you're like, man, I should have enjoyed more being a slow.
Right. So what are some lessons for listeners, and what have you learned from this, and how are you dealing with it and changing some things, the way that you're doing business, or, you know, just being more available in other areas to grow faster? What are you doing?
Yeah. So the biggest thing is having people that you can rely on that have gone and sort of trudged through that territory before you. So, you know, I got a lot of great friends, Dr. Giovannini, Dr. Nielsen, that have done and been successful. And I can see what they've done, take advice from others. I think the biggest thing I learned was I don't know everything, and I know less than nothing about creating a business. And I think as physicians, we're horrible business people.
Right.
They don't teach you those things in medical school at all. They just say, treat the patient, and we don't know anything about insurance, we don't know about collections, we don't know about bills and, you know, licensing and all that stuff. But having somebody you can call that has been there before, that can sort of guide you in what you need and what you don't need, and still there's mistakes made, because I obviously don't practice orthopedics all the time. I don't practice neurosurgery, so there's only so far you can go. But I think relying on the others who have charged before you is a really important task. I mean, people who have opened their own business are obviously going to have good advice for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's good advice just in general is, you know, if you're looking to do something, look at who's done it before you.
Find somebody who's your ideal practice, you know, and look at what they have and say, man, I would really like to have that. How did you do it? And you'd be surprised. People are willing to guide you through the whole process and tell you what to do, what not to do. They may have more money to play with than you do, but really in reality, you've got to start somewhere. And I think, you know, finding that practice that you want to be and sort of trying to take what's best out of that and integrate it into your own personality is probably a good starting point.
Yeah, that's great advice. So let's dig into today's episode and chat about starting a medical practice from the ground up. What are some of the biggest challenges of starting your own practice?
So I think the biggest thing is, A, you've got to have some sort of foundation. So I don't know how you would do it directly out of fellowship. You just go and hang your own shingle. You've got to have some basis, some financial success on record, because when you go to the bank, okay, the first thing you need is a line of credit. Unless you've saved up tons of money to open up a business, the usual line of credit is somewhere between $150,000 and $250,000, okay? And you think it sounds like a ton, but in reality, if you're not making collections and you've got employees, it goes pretty fast to open up a business. So got to have some sort of financial success. I'd highly recommend that if you're going on your own, to at least test the waters in some sort of big hospital, academic, something to show that you can be successful. And then when you go for that that line of credit, that small business loan, you're much more able to get what you need.
Right.
That's the biggest thing. You know, they want to see you as you're basically the collateral.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how successful have you been, and determine how much help you can get financially.
Sure. So physicians who want to open their own small practice relatively, and you kind of touched on this, how much do you need to borrow?
Yeah, so I think the thing to do is, you know, I would prefer local banks. You know, I had a connection through several patients who do commercial, you know, banking here in town. I mean, you can go with the Chase banks, you can go with the, you know, Bank of America, but I sort of like the hometown
right
sort of touch. You know, I don't know why, it's just me, maybe growing up in a small town, but usually a line of credit is the way to go. So you only are going to have to pay interest or pay back what you borrow. So that line of credit, if you don't touch it, it just stays there and you don't own anything. It's like a separate account, like another checking account. And you only take what you need to pay the bills. So that comes up with budgeting and all that stuff. You got to make sure you know how much you're going to, you know, spend that month or that week, because if you take the money out, you're automatically charged interest for it. But it's a good way because you sort of piecemeal it and you only take out what you need at the time. So line of credit is probably the way to go. The other things that you can do that don't come out of your line of credit, like for pain management or for ortho, if you do your own procedures in your office, you can get loans for equipment that don't come out of that line of credit. You still have to pay them back for ultrasounds and all that, but that can be an addition to your line of credit. But like anything, you just got to know that someday...
Yeah, somebody's going to come.
Somebody's going to come, yeah. All gotcha. Promises need to be fulfilled. So I think that, yeah, just watch it. But the line of credit is a form of borrowing, but you only take what you need when you need it. And then you pay it back, you know, right. And it's revolving.
Right. That's good. So how should physicians create a budget to figure out what they need and how to use that line of credit?
Okay, so this is the thing my wife and I argue. My wife is like a super numbers person. Like, I'm one of those dudes that... You know, anything physical, you know, something breaks, the dishwasher, the dryer, I'm on. But dude, you ask me to do the taxes, and I'm sort of like, okay, I'm not into that. So my wife's really good at that. When we talked, one thing that I decided was you need to have an accountant dedicated to your business. You know, somebody who can run the numbers, because what I found is that it's not so easy as tracking on QuickBooks what you bring in and what you spend. You have to do that. But you need an accountant to make sure that A, you're filing taxes on time, B, if you work for somebody or work for a physician's group like I do, even though I'm independent, they give you what they call a K-1 at the end of the year, how much your business has earned, how much taxes you've got to pay, you got to worry about payroll taxes. All those things can be so confusing. So it's easier just to record them on something like QuickBooks and then give them to your accountant and be able to have them track all that stuff. Cause you know, dealing with the IRS, dealing with, you know, all the taxes you owe and all the budgeting, that's the most important. So obviously recording things on a daily or weekly basis. And I mentioned QuickBooks, that's just the one we use. I think it's sort of universal for most people. And you put in all your expense categories, because at the end of the year, a lot of the stuff you do is tax deductible, you know? And so you got to make sure you record everything in a specific little entity. But yeah, keep a good QuickBooks, have a good office manager who can keep track of expenditures for gloves, waste disposal, get a good accountant, and have a wife who just keeps on you about keeping up to date.
Yeah, that's probably the best. That's the most important.
Or a husband, I'm not saying, you know, yeah. Whichever.
Yeah. So what do you really need? And, you know, I've talked to a lot of residents there and a lot of people starting their own practice. And I'm thinking of one in particular who basically pointed around the room at a convention we were at and like, I bought that. And I'm thinking, dude, you don't know what you're doing. You're going to be in trouble. So how do you know what you really need? And, you know, building out a wish list with priorities, how do you do that and make sure that you don't blow your budget or, you know, spend way too much when you could have used that money to meet payroll or something else?
Great question. So the biggest lessons I learned with this line of credit, like I said, it goes fast. So the things you need to start, I mean, with the new MIPS requirements, MACRA, all the things that the federal government's coming out, dictating and having a transcriptionist is probably of the past. Everybody has an electronic medical record, okay? And I'm not advocating for one or the other, but you really got to demo these things and talk to people. Some of these electronic medical records, which is the first thing you need to establish to record patient interaction, it can range from $15,000 to $100,000 with all these add-ons and extras and all that. So the first thing you need to do is find out an electronic medical record system that maybe somebody else has used that has a similar personality, similar practice to you, that works well, that's simple. I prefer the iPad-based ones where I can carry around a little iPad and do it while I'm walking. You know, I'm not really good at typing, but I'm really good at punching little boxes, you know. And get in a system that's intuitive, that you can do protocols, especially if you see the same patients all the time. If I see an ankle, if I see a knee or a lumbar spine. I've got all my protocols there. So it cuts down on time. So EMR, biggest thing. The biggest pitfalls of EMR, no matter what you do, are the hidden costs. Okay? So they'll say something like, it'll cost you $7,500 to buy this system, just to buy the system. It's going to cost you $550 per physician in your group to have access to our system. It's going to cost you additional, you know, $75 to $100 per month for the cloud-based system. My opinion is cloud-based is probably the way to go, other than having a server, which some EMRs go to. If you have a server, you've got to buy server time. You've got to have somebody that maintains the server. The servers break down all the time. Then you got to give access for people you refer to put in labs you requested, x-rays you requested into the server. If they have a virus, you've got a virus. I prefer the cloud-based. So the cloud-based goes anywhere. It doesn't matter if I'm at location one or location two. You just need the internet hookup. Second thing you got to think about is digital stuff. So in the day of internet piracy, the last thing you want is somebody to steal your information. So you've got to have a good IT person, okay? And I prefer, my biggest drawback is going with somebody who lives in Boca Raton. Dude, I don't know the dude in Boca Raton. I'd like somebody I can call and actually talk to face-to-face. And there's great companies around here to do that. But you got to have somebody who will set up a firewall so nobody can steal the patient information. You don't want to be that guy who breaks HIPAA laws.
Yeah.
So you got to invest in a firewall. There's many doctors that say, yeah, I'll go without it. It costs like, I think, $1,500 total for the firewall and to program it. I'll spend the $1,500 now instead of having a lawsuit or losing information, social security numbers, you know, 6 months down the road.
So right.
Firewall is a big thing. So internet security. Having a good internet, there's a lot of talk about people with iCloud-based systems where they break down or the internet stops working, or I've had this for 8 months and I haven't had that happen once. I'm sure it's going to happen, but just hasn't happened. Whereas servers, my friends that have servers, they break down pretty often, so that's just a matter of opinion.
Yeah.
So EMR, get your IT person. Those are the first things you got to do besides your line of credit, getting your bank stuff. After you have that, my preference is, what I learned is, starting from the top, get an office manager first. You know, get somebody who will, you can trust, that has experience, that can juggle all the balls, because you cannot. And then they can start the interview process and start lean. Like, I know I needed a front desk person and an MA and an office manager. What else do I need? I don't need a nurse. I mean, I don't need a nurse to call in medications for me. I just needed a medical assistant. My opinion, starting out with a nurse is too expensive. Starting out with a mid-level, like a PA or nurse practitioner, is crazy. Because if you don't have enough patients to see, you're paying, you know, six-figure salary to somebody who's just going to sit around and divide the spoils with you, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So start lean. Start with a minimal amount of staff. And, you know, one thing that I thought is, the best thing to start the cheapest is to find a place that's furnished. There's plenty of doctors who rent space, plenty of offices who rent space that they're fully furnished. Because you don't know, when you rent a space, that's just for the utilities in the space. You still have to furnish it. And it can cost thousands of dollars to rent or to buy furniture, tables, exam stuff. On top of that, so yeah,
it all adds up.
Dude, find a space that's already done, you know. And I started out with a 2-room space. I've had spaces at my last job with 8 rooms in it, and I've used maybe 3 on my busiest day. So I don't need an 8-room office.
Right.
I need a 2-to-3-room office. It'd be nice to have my own little office to go back and retreat to. But yeah, start small, man. You can always expand, and sign a lease where you can, you know, give notice within 10 to 14 days and get out of it. You know, don't sign your life away for 2 years.
Definitely.
Yeah, so hidden fees. Even though you buy an EMR, there's going to be training. And you got to think about, you know, if they're based out in California, you're going to fly your whole crew out to California to be training your EMR. You're going to pay for some dude to get paid $150 an hour even while he sleeps to come train you here in town. So those are the things you got to budget for. And make sure you get it all in writing. Get all the fees, you know, so you're not surprised later on.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody is in pain management and they want a cloud-based system that's easy to use, what would you recommend?
So I love ModMed. It's Modernizing Medicine. We call it EMA. It's called the Electronic Medical Assistant. So what it is, it's iPad-based, it's cloud-based. The cool thing about it is it totally eliminates the need for a scribe. Everybody, like, I had a scribe in my last job. It was awesome because I really suck at notes. Like, I had to dictate everything, but if I have a scribe that just goes off of what I'm talking with a patient and the exam, dude, it makes so much things easier. But with a cloud-based iPad system, with all your protocols in, I can get a note done in 2-3 minutes, you know? It does not take long, and that's for a new visit. So I like that. It's cloud-based, and it's geared towards orthopedics, pain medicine. They also have specialties like rheumatology, neurology, dermatology now, but it's mostly orthopedics, sports medicine, pain sort of based. It has all your protocols, and it updates it for the new ICD-10 changes and all the CPT code billing changes automatically.
That's awesome. How do you know when companies are trying to get you to buy something that you don't really need? Right? Because you get calls all day.
The time. Yeah, yeah. And as Luke can testify, even my patient referral system, I get people trying to sell me loans. Like on a patient referral system online. It's crazy. So a lot of times, all you need is the basics of what I said. Get your line of credit. Get your EMR, get your IT stuff. I think the biggest downfalls will be IT, because they will sell you a monthly plan to monitor your laptops or whatever. Dude, there's some guys who are charging like $1,000 just to monitor if your computer gets a virus. So in the last year, I've had one issue where I had to reload a printer driver, you know?
Sounds like a big issue.
Yeah, a big issue that I can do myself. Right. What do I need somebody to monitor? I need somebody to monitor the firewall, do the updates, and you know, do the initial programming. And really beyond that, you can get somebody local. So don't fall into these hidden fees where you need somebody to monitor your system. The other hidden fees are people that come and try to sell you equipment that you might not need. You know, everybody's into these braces and all this stuff, but remember, you've got to buy this stuff to stock it, you know? For me, the biggest thing is like Botox or like Synvisc, the hyaluronic acid and stuff for the knees. You got to remember that you have to pay for that and depend it upon the insurance to reimburse you to pay it. And a lot of times they under reimburse. So don't go nuts on buying a lot of stocking products that you don't need. They're expensive. And insurance sometimes isn't reimbursed to even cover the cost of the product. So those are big things. There's always people selling all sorts of medical equipment. Just go for the bare bones, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Or say no.
Just say no. So I tell my wife, I go, my new mantra is no, 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 no. Yes. No, 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 no. Yes. Yeah. So don't be a yes man when it comes to that, because you can get yourself in trouble pretty quick.
Definitely. So I want to talk about emails a little bit. You talked about HIPAA compliance, IT. Email is a big thing. I mean, I've seen people set up, and this is not a personal email, a professional one, and it's, you know, @gmail.com. And I'm thinking, you can't do that. You've got to be @your.com. You've got to look legit. So what do we do to solve that issue?
Yeah, so this is, I think, where your company came in as a lifesaver. So there were two ways, or actually three ways I could go. There was an independent contractor, and you were really good about not, like, trying to push me one way or another. Right. You gave me options. But there are guys who can set up HIPAA-compliant emails for a couple gold bars. You know, that's, like, really expensive. Or the best way is to do a BAA agreement with Google that has HIPAA-compliant email. Or I can just say Mike@PRM Healthcare. It doesn't say Gmail on it, and it looks professional, it's HIPAA compliant, and it's cheap.
Right.
That's the way to go. And you can exchange information that way about patients. The other way you can go, sometimes your EMR, like my EMR, has IntraMail.
Okay.
And they can pin it to the company as well, but it's a much higher cost than what the HIPAA-compliant Google Mail would be. But you can go that way, and it protects your information if you're sending charts or whatever. But you've got all that add-ons. They will fix you up with fax. They will fix you up with mail. They will fix you up with all these extras. If you don't need that option, and you can go with something cheaper that provides, you know, support you need, and Google is universal, I mean, that would be my opinion, is go for the Google, you know, HIPAA-compliant email.
Right.
It's the cheapest. It's the best option. And, dude, it looks so professional.
Yeah, and it's, I haven't tried this, and I wouldn't necessarily, I'm not saying do it, but I think Google is going to get more and more in the healthcare space. Using Google Drive is, again, under the BAA, and people are using that as server space. When is Google going to go down versus a server you have in a dusty closet?
Thank you. So, and we use that like crazy. You know, we store all of our logos. We store all my templates for stuff. I mean, and we share the Google Drive, and you can give access. And as the business owner, you can be the administrator like I am, or you can give it to your office manager or whatever, and you can create emails for each new employee and accounts for each new employee that comes on. It's super easy. It takes like 2 seconds.
Right.
You know, it's like, for me and my 4 employees, I think we pay like $33 or something for the email service a month.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so let's speed up at the end. I'm going to ask you a few questions. What's the best advice you've ever been given?
Oh, that's a good one. Go out on my own. Okay. Yeah. I think right now, I think if people are listening to this and they're deciding if they want to go and do their own business, the grass is always greener on the other side, right? I mean, I live by that sort of adage. What I would say, though, is that the problems that I have with owning my own business are totally awesome and acceptable to the problems I used to have. Case in point, there's nobody telling you how many patients you have to see. Your overhead is controllable, your costs are controllable, and you can practice the way that you want to practice. Those are the big things. So the best advice was probably from Dr. Nelson, who was just like, dude, you would do great on your own. I never believed him. It took him like 6 years to convince me to do it. And when I finally did it, you know, if I could ever think of kissing a man on the lips, that would be the guy I would do it to. Yeah.
I'll let him know.
Yeah. Please let him know. Yeah.
All right. So what's the worst part of your job and how do you overcome it?
So I think the worst part of my job is, as I was referring to at the beginning, was knowing that you've got a good product, you're good at your job, that you know you're going to be successful, is the waiting. I think it's just me, but this whole society is a McDonald's drive-thru. We want it now, you know, and that is difficult for me to wait and build up a patient base and to want to be successful today. Now, if you can find a way to work your non-compete where you can take a list of patients, that's what you need. Take those patients with you, because advertising and everything is going to boil down having an existing pool of patients. If you're starting from scratch like I did and sort of, you know, trying to reinvent yourself, you just got to be patient. That's the biggest problem I have, is I just want more now, but knowing that it's just going to take time.
Yeah.
And it's working out. It's doing great. It's just, you know, I want to be where I was, you know, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And part of that is just society in general. You know, a new iPhone's released. We want it.
Dude, I want that iPhone X today. I don't want to wait till the middle of November. Come on, man.
Right. Exactly. So be patient. That's good. What's a personal habit that contributes to your success?
I had a orthopedic surgeon, was a good friend of my father in high school. And that's really where I sort of wanted to, you know, go into this orthopedic realm. Even though I don't do orthopedic surgery, physical medicine rehab is basically non-operative orthopedic, sports medicine, sort of base, spine. He told me that if I was a factory worker, I'd be the best dang factory worker that ever lived. If you gave me a kernel of corn and a stick, I could build the biggest corn farm and be the most successful farmer that you've ever seen. So what he was trying to say is, look, success is really dependent on how much you want it. What separates the men from the boys is this, not this thing called desire, it's self-discipline, okay? It's easy to go to work when you love what you do every day and it's easy and everything goes your way. Nobody gets in your way, everything's successful. That's easy. Anybody can do that. The people who are successful are the ones who wake up when the wind's in their face and they still do it every day, knowing that perseverance is going to pay off. So self-discipline, you know, I think that that's probably the key.
Yep. Can you share an internet resource that helps you?
That's good. Yeah, there's several. So medically, you know, for my practice, internet resource for starting a business. that would be a tough one. I could name off a bunch for, like, you know, the CDC guidelines for prescribing, those kinds of things. I use a lot of PubMed for publishing, you know, for studies and keep up to date. I think that if I were to say probably the easiest and most used website is probably Google and YouTube. Because yeah. I always look up procedures and look at ultrasound stuff. But those are probably, yeah, it's probably not what you're looking for. But honestly, that's probably the website I use the most. But,
right. Me too. Yeah.
Just everybody. Google. This isn't a Google commercial.
Google it.
Google's got everything.
Yeah.
They if I do. Say what the ICD-10 code is for this or what the CPT code for billing for this, data pops right up.
Yeah. And some people who are older and wiser in a lot of things, they aren't wiser in technology. That stuff can be at their fingertips and they aren't utilizing it. So if you're not using Google when you don't know something, before you text a friend, before you make a call, just Google it.
Yeah. You know, for my patients, the funny thing is I just refer them to your website that you made for me because everything's on there. And, you know, you create this website that has all the content. And that's the sort of the idea is you want the one-stop shopping, sort of the encyclopedia for your practice. Mm-hmm. So when a patient says, hey, do you have anything on, you know, diagnostic branch blocks of the facets and the spine? Oh, we got a great description. Just look at the website, you know. And so that's another one. I would say my patients use that the most, you know, for information. So.
Definitely. Okay. Let's end this thing by you telling listeners how they can get in touch with you.
So the best way to get in touch with me is probably through email, mike@prmhealthcare.com, all lowercase. The other email is info@prmhealthcare.com. That'll go directly to, you know, our Google stuff. I mean, it's HIPAA compliant. I doubt you'll be sending any HIPAA constrained emails. But yeah, if you have any questions, I'd be more than happy to give my 2 cents. You know, it might not be the 2 cents you're looking for, but it would basically guide anybody and, you know, avoiding my pitfalls and mistakes. Yeah, great.
That's awesome. Give us some final words. What's the best advice you can tell our listeners who are struggling to make their practice work and be profitable?
So the biggest thing that I struggle with is the ability to capture new business. So in today's day and age, you know, I had this, before I met your team, I had this idea that, yeah, I could just do like a, what's that guy that always advertises Shannara? Or
yeah,
I want to say the Shannara Chronicles. I'm thinking like sci-fi or something. Alex.
Yeah, he has billboards across
everywhere,
every interstate.
You know, so that's great, but I have never, like, the only reason I see that is that guy's everywhere. I would never tell you what his address or phone number is. Billboards don't capture my attention. I never look at the newspaper because I'm always looking online at CNN. I'm always using Google for all my searches, and I'm 43 years old. So, you know, in this age group, I think the biggest thing is to get advertising that will play to your strengths. So the internet and social media are the way to capture new patients. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Make sure your, you know, your Google search hooks up to where you are actually. You know, if you have to, if you have to, you know, hire somebody to do that. But I would say advertising through the internet, sort of what you're doing, has helped me to grow faster than I ever would have by putting out ads in the Pensacola News Journal or whatever. It's just, I think it's what the future is going to be like. I think that's what our age group, you know, anybody from probably 60 on down knows how to do that and usually will go that route to find out about you or to find out what you're about or what, you know, what kind of patients you see or what your hours are or where you're located, for gosh sakes.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, using social media, hiring somebody like yourself to be able to guide you through that process has been the most eye-opening and the most rewarding. The best advice I can give everybody, start with that because you cannot move forward without advertising and gaining new patients. The patients are your product, okay? Some would argue that you are the product as a physician, but really you cannot use that product unless you have somebody that consumes it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And those are the patients. So how would you best reach them? And I think through social media and the internet, you got to have somebody that can navigate that.
Right, definitely.
Case in point with Google, you know, like if you Googled my name, like for so long, it would say like University of Michigan, where I did a fellowship like 8 years ago. I'm not at the University of Michigan. And I wouldn't know how to navigate my way towards that to get Google to change that. You know, it was just impossible. But things like that, you would never be able to do on your own. It'd be impossible.
Definitely. You know? Yeah. A great website, SEO, findability, and create two-way conversations. So a billboard can't do that.
A billboard cannot do that.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. I hope this episode helps those who are looking to start a practice from the ground up. And if they have any questions, reach out.
Please, please. I'll have one of my six kids, you know, answer you.
Yeah, there you go.
That'd be awesome.
They're your scribe.
That's right. Great advice.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, man.
Okay, listeners, I hope this helped. We'd love to know what you thought about today's podcast, so shoot me an email at luke@hipcreativeinc.com and let me know things you are implementing from today's episode. Also, if you have any ideas on topics or just ideas for the podcast in general, let me know. To learn more about Hip Creative, head over to hip.agency. Thank you so much.